Good evening and welcome to By the People, Election 2004 on WILL-TV. I'm John Paul. Thanks for joining us tonight. Tonight is your chance to hear from the candidates in the 19th congressional race in Illinois. You can also learn about the issues that are being discussed in that race in the southern, really southern half of Illinois. Here's a look at the 19th Congressional District so you can see the area that it comprises. It covers much of central and south central Illinois. On the north, the 19th reaches to the south side of the city of Springfield. It then travels southeast through Christian and Shelby counties, straight south to Effingham and Vandalia. Then it spreads west and east, west to parts of the Metro East area, and east nearly to the state line with Indiana. Cities like Olney, Mount Vernon, Centralia, and Edwardsville are all some of the larger cities in the southern portion of the 19th District. Notice the district then heads south all the way to the Ohio River, right across the state line from Paducah. We are joined in the studio tonight by the challenger in the race, Democrat Tim Bagwell of Olney. Tim, welcome.
Thank you, John.
Mr. Bagwell is a businessman who develops software and publishes internet journals. He also teaches or has taught online business for the University of Phoenix. He says his parents are Roosevelt-era Democrats, and he describes his platform as traditional progressive economics of the Democratic Party. This is Mr. Bagwell's first bid for major public office. Now, unfortunately, the incumbent in this race could not be with us live in the studio tonight. Republican Congressman John Shimkus of Collinsville is still working on Capitol Hill this week. Although you will hear from him tonight, I did a videotaped interview with him about 2 weeks ago at his office in Springfield, so we'll see that in just a few minutes. We also urge you to call us tonight with your questions for Mr. Bagwell or about the 19th District and the issues. The number is at the bottom of your screen, 217-333-3495. Write that number down. Don't call quite yet because we're not quite ready for your calls because we're going to go to that long videotape and don't want you on hold for a long time. But keep the number handy so you can call us. Well, let's start with a question for Mr. Bagwell tonight, who is with us. Let me ask you, first of all, why it is you think people in the 9th District should send you to Washington and not John Shimkus.
The 19th District of Illinois has been suffering for the past 4 years under the Bush administration's economic policies. We have the highest unemployment in the state, and we need an infusion of jobs and of opportunity for the people.
And you don't feel that's something that John Shimkus can bring to the people of the 19th
District? Hasn't been bringing it so far, and we've been seeing more and more jobs leave for out of state and overseas.
Day after Election Day, actually the day after you would be sworn in Washington, you get there to your office on Capitol Hill. What's the top thing on your desk for number one issue you want to tackle?
The expansion of Highway 50, widening it to four lanes from Lebanon, Illinois to Washington, Indiana, where a new interstate's going in, connecting Evansville and Indianapolis.
We will hear more from Tim Bagwell in just a few minutes. Let's go now, if we can, to the taped interview of incumbent John Shimkus. He will be back in about 25 minutes after that interview with Mr. Shimkus. Here's that interview. Mr. Shimkus, give me an idea why you think the people of the 19th District should send you back to Washington for a fifth term.
Yeah,
for another term.
That's kind of surprising, running for a fifth term. I mean, that's year 9 and year 10. They know me by now. So I think the things that I ran on a long time ago, back in 96, my first successful campaign, a belief in individual liberties and freedoms, lower taxes, trying to get a handle on budgetary issues, which we have problems with right now, I think they have said to me, and I believe that I've been consistent with what I ran on in 96. My record approves that, and that's kind of the way the district is. It's a conservative district based upon fiscal and social issues, and I want to continue to serve them.
At the top of your list, if you were to look at all the things that you'd like to accomplish in the next 2 years, what's priority one for you at this point?
You know, every year brings specific issues that rise up. And there is no bigger issue in the state of Illinois, I think the state as a whole, especially in my district, especially south of Springfield, the medical liability. Doctors are leaving. Liability insurance is just out the roof. We've tried to address it at the House Our Senate has not brought the bill for a vote on the floor. The state legislators say they can't do anything, so it has to be a federal response. I think that's a cop-out on their end. They can do it too. We can both do it. But it's an access to care now issue. It'll drive a lot of things. It'll drive on where do people want to live, where do manufacturers want to place facilities. And we have to fix it. We just have to fix it. And there's 27 states that have caps on the punitive damages. I think that's where we need to be as a start. And there's other good reforms around the table. The states that have moved in that area have seen a decrease in medical liability issues, and that is by far the number one issue.
But you'd like to see it at a federal level, medical malpractice.
Actually, I'd like to see it either place. I wish the legislature would have addressed it before they adjourned. I hope they take it up in the veto session. I kind of doubt it. If they could fix it, great, because we're having problems at the federal level fixing it. And it's really, the U.S. Senate that has this filibuster. So it's a minority that really can prohibit a vote on the floor, and that's what's occurring, and that's what elections are all about. The elections are about if there is a issue that has such a pressing desire, hopefully the public will use that as one of the reasons they make choices on candidates and help change the dynamics of some of these legislative bodies.
How do you think John Shimkus has changed or evolved from that first term, not only issue-wise, but how have you changed as a representative of the people or as a person over those years being on Capitol Hill?
Well, one thing, I haven't changed my office yet, and I've been in the same office now 8 years. Maybe I'll change because of dynamics and stuff, but I think probably confidence, knowledge. I'm now kind of mid-level in seniority. We've had a lot of successes in legislation. Some are as important as renewable fuels and biodiesel, soy diesel, and ethanol. Some that reflect kids, my .kids.us issue. It's just an exciting opportunity to protect small kids on the internet, E911. So I've had successes. That breeds confidence, and then you get to work with big public policy guys. So that when you work with the Speaker of the House, it's not like, "Ooh, it's the Speaker of the House." It's Denny. You get a chance to go to a bill signing with the President. It's always an honor to visit with the President. But when you do it a couple times, it makes it easier to talk to him specifically about the current concerns that affect your state and your area.
How would you defend, I guess, any criticism that somebody might put against you, saying you've been there long enough, you're an insider, you're an in the beltway type of guy now, you're not truly from downstate Illinois. How do you defend somebody who might make an accusation like, shh, he's a political insider now on Capitol Hill because he's been there long enough?
First of all, I challenge that person to define downstate Illinois. What I found in my redistricting is, where is downstate? South of I-80, south of Springfield, south of the Metro East, south of Illinois 13. It's kind of a fun debate, but I still live here. I travel every week. I live in my hometown of Collinsville. When I'm home, I'm shopping at the grocery stores. I'm taking my kids down to the soccer fields. The fun thing about that is people have access to me.
And you feel that's an important way for you to remain attached rather than detached, as some people might view congressmen as.
Yeah, I think, and I'm still in somewhat a competitive district, and I think that forces me to be out. Yesterday I was in Fairfield and Almy and Flora, and today I'm in Springfield and Rochester. Tomorrow I'll be in Vandalia. The next day after that I'll be in Greenville. Part of my job is being available and accessible. I think when people who don't travel their district because they get so set in their ways and they get elected so many times, that's probably a fair criticism. But I don't think I've reached that level of a position in the House. And plus, I'm a term limits guy. I mean, I'm serving 12 years. So it's a promise I made. It's a promise I'm going to keep. I kind of relish these years, and I want to be out because I know I'm not going to get a chance to do this forever because of the promise I made. So maybe I appreciate it a little bit more.
As you travel the district, not only during campaign years, but let's say within the last 8 months or so, what common issue are people bringing to you? Is it Iraq? Is it the economy in Southern Illinois? Is it national security? Is it medical malpractice? What are you What are you hearing that somebody, when they shake your hand, says, you got to take care of this?
Medical liability, as I said before, is the number one issue. No doubt it affects insurance premiums. It affects hospitals, rural hospitals, metropolitan hospitals, access to care. Then you go to, and I think they kind of evenly balance. So there's a lot of concern about Iraq, just because we have young men and women who are over there in a very dangerous environment, and some, you know, not coming back. And we, as a nation, are very compassionate and of concerns, and we see the pictures. We don't like them, and we'd like for it to be fixed and be resolved, and we know it's not going to be for a while. So it's kind of hard for us who like to fix things quickly when these things drag on. And the economy is also of concern. Illinois is a mess. It is identified by any business evaluation as a state that's not friendly to business. So as the nation's economic recovery continues, which it is, I mean, you just go look at the numbers. I've got a friend competing for in a very competitive seat in Minnesota. He's got 4% unemployment. I've got counties that have 10-11% unemployment. And why is that? Because when you have high insurance premiums, when you have medical liability concerns, access to care, when you have worker comp problems, other issues, if you're going to expand, why not go to a state that is more favorable than Illinois? That's an issue that the state legislature is going to have to address, and that's an issue that I have to at least use my bully pulpit. I talk more about medical liability now than I ever have. I've always been a tort reform guy, but the crisis is now at such a level that I cannot not mention it almost every place I go.
There's a lot of talk by the presidential candidates this year about the issues of national security in Iraq, and a lot of mudslinging on that issue. As you talk to people, and as they, do you detect concern about those issues in your district? And I guess related to that, what about yourself? Do you feel we're secure enough, that your district, that your state is secure enough?
Well, there's benefits of living in the heartland, but we also know that the terrorists will look at the soft targets. And where could those soft targets be? I will say I subscribe to the analysis of the commission report that basically said we're safer, but we're still not safe. And I'm a, you know, maybe it's my military background, maybe it's how I've evolved. I like the fact, and I think in my congressional district, most people concur, that we want this fight taken to our enemies. We want to push out the perimeters. We want the battle waged overseas before it's waged on our homeland. I mean, the September 11th attacks was equal to or is more devastating to December 7th and the Pearl Harbor attacks. We do not want to put that have that happen. It can, but we don't want it to happen through our lack of not being engaged. And so I think that's very easily identified as a belief and a value that stems from my district, and it's fortunate that it's the value that I hold. So I think I'm in sync with the district on that.
Are you optimistic about Iraq?
I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I'm not one to say, look at today and it's a failure, look at today, it's a success. I think, really, it's going to be 10 years down the line before we can really make a fair judgment. I think it's going to be years before we really understand what happened with Saddam Hussein and what kind of games he was playing, and was he just playing a big game of risk and portrayed that he had weapons of mass destruction when he knew he didn't, to be the big kid on the block. That'll all sort itself out. But I do know that the people who are trying to bring democracy to Iraq, and not enough is spoken about their commitment, and they're willing to risk their lives of themselves and their families. I'm talking about Iraqis who are putting their lives on the line to bring democracy to Iraq. And I've got to believe, I'm not one that says that there's certain areas of the world where they cannot develop democracies. It's not true. But it's very difficult and it's very challenging. And the attacks that are occurring now are attacks to try to forestall elections at the end of December or early in January to keep this process moving. These elections will occur.
You are have been supportive of the troops, I assume, in Iraq. Are you willing to use your vote in Congress to continue to fund what currently is going on in Iraq, or would you like to see changes in terms of troop support in the Iraq and Afghanistan area?
Oh, I mean, anyone who would talk about not funding our troops when they're deployed in dangerous places and locations are really, I don't think, understands the American people. They may disagree about how you got there, but they will definitely side with that. Once they're there, they better be supported financially, morally, with the commitment of the country at large. And that's where I'm going to be.
Are you concerned at all, though, that the costs of this particular battle are higher than might have first been anticipated, and that Americans may have to make a sacrifice somewhere else, or that the government may have to make sacrifices in other places?
Yeah, well, I mean, war is war, and it's the fog of war occurs, and the success on the battlefield does not always directly relate to success for the peace. And I think those of us who really understood, and I've traveled to Iraq, and I'm looking to return soon, to see the mass graves, to see the abuse, to see the chemical attacks on his own people. The world's a much safer place without Saddam Hussein. I'm not saying it's safe, but it's better off, and I think we have the opportunity, whether it'll be successful or not, we have the opportunity to really bring structural change to a place that knows nothing but really lawlessness.
The U.S. kind of passed, I don't know whether to call it a milestone, but a marker when you had 1,000 troops die. You must have lost some troops within your district, too.
Right.
And I think for most Americans, that's pretty hard to swallow.
It's really hard to swallow. I've been to a couple funerals. I don't go unless I'm invited. Obviously, we always, in essence, do the things that members should do to make sure the families know that we know. It's a really interesting balance. You don't want to take the spotlight away from remembering those who have fallen. 1,000 casualties is high. You know what's interesting? The marriage of this whole Iraqi campaign and our celebrations of World War II, Ronald Reagan's death, the Normandy, and the Greatest Generation, which was World War II veterans. I've been calling this generation today the next Greatest Generation. We see kids in this environment volunteering to go. I have my nephew is in Germany now, recently inducted. Now in Germany, he knew his rotation is to Iraq. What would inspire the young men and women of our nation to go in now? I think it's a sense of loyalty, duty, and honor, and respect for the country, that to with an appreciation of that people have gone before you to risk your life in service for your country. And those folks who have fallen honorably. But when you see, I mean, I have a there's a family at my church now whose husband and father died in Iraq. And when I see Susie and I see her two children and I see him weekly, it's always a burden. It's never easy.
But that in no way changes your political position on Iraq.
I'm a military guy. You know, our military is a voluntary military. We don't have conscription. These people volunteer to serve, whether they're Army officers or whether they're enlisted. They're doing what they've chosen to do to serve their country, and they're doing it honorably. And it doesn't, but it's still hard. I mean, it's still hard. They're doing the job they chose to do. What I like to also talk about is what isn't covered. We readily hear the problems, but you all cover, and so do a lot of the local community papers. They always cover the story of the young men and women who has come home, and they'll ask them, I have yet to find a story in my local district of 30 counties of a soldier male or female who's come back and says, you know, we shouldn't be there. We're not doing any good. All these stories are positive. This is what we're doing. Women are getting freedoms. Schools are being opened. Hospitals are being filled. Electricity is being delivered. We have a percentage that really want to disrupt this movement to democracy, but our service is honorable and it's worth the risk. And I would challenge anybody to refute that, because I haven't seen the stories of the young men and women who have come back. I just haven't seen it.
Let me ask you kind of a personal question about your service in Congress. When you look at other people in Congress, especially in the House, who do you admire and who would you most like to be like?
Well, again, I'm biased. Denny Hastert is a great friend, you know, and I don't say that because now he's the Speaker of the House. When I got elected, he helped in my election in 96. He helped get me on the Commerce Committee, and before he became Speaker, we served on the same committee for 2 years. He was a father figure. He probably wouldn't like to hear that. He kind of took me under his wing and gave me advice and counsel, and his leadership style is really commendable. You all have followed politics with me and national issues, and you know, leaving the Newt Gingrich era, who was a great thinker but a terrible administrator. Couldn't keep the troops in line. Denny leads through quiet confidence and strength in bringing people together. He's had a very successful run as Speaker of the House. He's a down-to-earth guy from rural Illinois, same values, and I am honored to call him my friend.
By the same vein, what in the last 2 years would you say you are most proud of in terms of your personal political accomplishments on Capitol Hill?
Well, there are two. One is still trying to unfold. I've done a lot of work on it because of my committee assignment, 911, making that the national number, then E911, which is enhanced 911, so that you can identify a location of a person on the cell phone who calls for help. That is saving lives, and we're trying to move that quickly, and we might have success. I was just with my son last night. My sister's going to night school, and she wants to be a teacher, and she's in a class about technology. And so she asked me to come to talk about kids.us, which is a safe site for kids on the Internet. Now, people say, oh, there's no safe site for kids on the Internet. There is. And this was a legislative approach that I worked across the aisle with a very liberal member of Congress, but a good friend, Ed Markey from Massachusetts, to set up a site working with the site supervisor, which is New Star, a company. And we have a site, www.kids.us, for kids, that's safe for kids under the age of 13, where there's no hyperlinks, no instant messaging, obviously no pornography, none of that. It's an information site only. I took my 4-year-old son to this class with me last night, and over the August break, I worked with him so he can get on. So I can say, go ahead, Daniel, you can go play on the Internet now. So he can sign on his name, he can go to the Internet, and his default is kids.us, and he can play games. So he's like his big brothers, he can surf the web. Although I know for him, he's safe, because it's and we're just trying to get the word out. We have kids.us, we got Nick Jr. kids.us, we have Smithsonian kids.us, all these sites that now parents, if they want, at least, especially for the smaller children. Now, my 11-year-old might be far advanced for that by now. But this is great for my 4-year-old, and I'm very proud of it.
Let's talk about something that could come up in the next 2 years, especially in your district or in an area very much affected by your district. The Pentagon may decide to close some military bases,
right,
and Scott may be on the list.
Right.
How is that possible closure, and what would John Shimkus do to perhaps, I assume, oppose something like that and try to keep that base alive and well? And I know there are bases in Springfield,
right,
Peoria, and the arsenal in Rock Island that are also,
right,
on the jeopardy,
right,
list.
Right.
Tell me how all of that would impact not only Illinois, but your district and what you'd do about it.
Well, we've been working closely with the members of Congress who are concerned, and really the Illinois delegation, along with the state of Illinois, and they've put some money for some lobbyists and folks to what we have done, and I've worked especially in respect to Scott, working with Congressman Costello to make the case that that facility is better than it was in the last round of BRAC. It was misidentified or misnamed or however in the last round they said Scott is a heavy bomber base. Well, if you look around, there's no really heavy bombers there. So, of course, it was in jeopardy. Now it's classified as a major command headquarters. And it is. It's a major command of three joint commands. It's where the military wants to go to. And that alone puts it in a better position. Plus the movement by the past administration of moving the KC-135s down from Chicago. We have worked diligently in this last round. In fact, we announced a month ago, Senator Durbin, Congressman Costello, and I, about three new C-40s to the 932nd Air Evac, 1,000 employees there at Scott, more airframes on the ground makes a better case. We're pretty confident that Scott will survive, and the environment's different than the last round. There was the environment pre-September 11th was consolidate around major headquarters, probably around Washington, D.C. Well, September 11th says, you know, maybe it's important to have major command headquarters dispersed. So that's the argument we're going to make. That's the argument we're going to make for here in Springfield and Peoria. But BRAC's going to happen. It really has to happen. I'm not adverse. I'm not one to say BRAC shouldn't happen. BRAC has to happen. But we just need to continue to fight for the facilities in Illinois.
Let's run through a couple of rapid-fire issues here as we get near the end of the discussion with you, and I'll ask for somewhat brief answers. constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage.
We're going to vote on it next week, and I'll vote yes.
You would ban to vote, or vote to ban same-sex marriage?
Correct.
And put a constitutional amendment perhaps before the states?
We will have a vote next week, and everyone knows I'll vote yes. I'm not a sponsor of the bill. It's nothing I really try to demagogue or argue. It's just I'm going to be required to say yes or no, and I'll say yes.
Allowing the ban on assault weapons to expire.
It has, and it's gone. So if the question is if there was a vote to extend it, I would not have voted to extend it.
Your support of allowing Americans to carry concealed weapons.
Of course, Second Amendment constitutional right. We've done that recently in House Resolution 218, which allowed retired law enforcement officials to do that. And criminals have it. Criminals don't abide by the law. I support the right to keep and bear arms.
Funding for stem cell research.
We do it now. That's not really the question. The question is, do we expand it and do we allow stem cell research from aborted fetuses? I would not support increasing. The president's compromise is we have stem cells from frozen embryos and aborted fetuses right now. Let's use those. That's federally funded. But I'm a pro-life candidate, believe that that pro-life position extends initially to conception, and that's why I have a personal moral problem with that.
Last question, I just kind of want to go back and revisit an issue we discussed at the very beginning here, and that is, if you are reelected, number one issue for you in the next 2 years?
Well, medical liability. Again, it's access to care. Doctors are leaving. Citizens do not have access to OBGYNs. Basically, really for neurology and automobile accidents, it causes a skyrocketing cost of insurance. It helps make it difficult for people to want to employ more folks when you have high insurance costs. By far, it's very parochial, but sometimes the parochial issues become the most pressing issue.
Again, a recorded interview with Congressman John Shimkus from September 17th at his office in Springfield. Now let's get to the man who is live here in the studio. That's the challenger in this race, Democrat Tim Bagwell of Olney. We do want to remind you that now is the time for you to head to the telephone if you have questions about the race, questions about for our candidate tonight who is here. You can reach us in the studio tonight by calling 217-333-3495. Well, Tim, the advantage, I suppose, to Mr. Shimkus is he gets 25 uninterrupted minutes. The disadvantage is he doesn't have to answer telephone calls, and he's not here in person to really confront you or answer questions. He talked about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Number one agenda item for him, medical malpractice liability. Is that a big issue in your mind?
Not as big as he makes it out to be. The issue that I see with my people in the district is jobs leaving the area. In terms of health care, it's when your jobs are leaving, you lose your job. It's having that health insurance coverage. That's what the people are really concerned about that I've been talking to.
What would you do about the economy? What's Tim Bagwell's position on changing some of the high unemployment rates in some of those counties that are the highest in Illinois?
Well, one of the things is improving our transportation infrastructure. Like I said earlier, to widen Highway 50 and widen Highway 51. The other thing would be broadband access in Southern Illinois. Part of that export of jobs overseas was high-tech jobs that for lower wages overseas, a lot of high-tech jobs went there. What we without any consideration for the highly skilled people in Southern Illinois or in regions like Southern Illinois, where if we had the broadband access that Bombay, India has, we would have had those jobs too, or at least could have competed and said, well, it doesn't cost as much to live in Southern Illinois. We bring those jobs here instead of exporting them abroad. We'll give you lower wages here, not as low as St. Louis or Washington, D.C. or Chicago. Well, as low as those cities, but higher than Bombay, but give us a chance.
To what degree does your business experience help you or make it advantageous for you along those lines when it comes to economic issues?
Well, it enables me. One of the reasons I started the campaign was that my business is internet publishing, and we started up our business in 2000. And we were going along okay, and then the economy really took a downturn, and it took a downturn in the high-tech area first. It really hit the high-tech area. There were factories leaving all the time since the mid-90s, but that hit in the high-tech area. I saw that Southern Illinois wasn't getting what it needed to bring in the high-tech jobs or compete to get those high-tech jobs. It was just made so evident to me by those events at with the dot-com bust.
Now, you've had the advantage after listening to Mr. Shimkus for 25 minutes. What else did you hear him say that you don't think is the proper perspective?
Well, on the medical malpractice issue, the thing is, in Southern Illinois, we have always had a problem with retaining physicians and retaining specialists. I think recently they've cited the exit of two neurosurgeons, I think, from Carbondale. I don't know how many neurosurgeons, if you evenly distributed all the neurosurgeons in the United States, how many are going to be in Southern Illinois? For years, people in Southern Illinois have been going to, it's not the greatest of all things, but they have been going to St. Louis, Springfield, Evansville, Terre Haute, Champaign for specialty medical care. Which means what has to happen in Southern Illinois is the development of our communities, the development of communities so that we can retain physicians, make them attractive places to live. And we can retain physicians longer and build a triage system really in our medical services. Our hospitals are triage hospitals. I'll give you an example. Outside of Illinois, I was visiting relatives in Maryland with my mother about 3 years ago. And she suffered a heart attack in Columbia, Maryland, which is a modern city, planned city, outside Washington, D.C., the highest percentage of doctors in the nation, after San Francisco, I think. I think it may be higher. And she was taken to Howard County Community Hospital, about 10 minutes away. And she coded there. They revived her, but immediately shipped her to Sinai Hospital in North Baltimore. They did not have the facilities to put stents in her and to deliver to her the intensive care that she's going to need over the next week. She survived, and fortunately, she's healthy and walking around and in rehab and doing real fine. But the thing was is that even in Washington, D.C., you have communities that have triage-type hospitals, and what their job is to make sure the person is stabilized and gotten to the advanced care facility, more likely in a suburb or in North Baltimore in this case. We have that same situation in Southern Illinois. This is not new.
As you travel the district, what are people talking to you about?
They're talking about the loss of jobs, they're talking about the environment, and they're talking about health insurance.
Now, when you say environment, what aspects are coming to the top? The national forest issues, or?
No, definitely the national forest issues. At the beginning of this campaign, I didn't think it was going to be a problem, but with the Bush administration wanting to change there's new legislation, there's a review of rules regarding the harvesting of national forests coming up, and the Bush administration wants to open up so much of the national forest for logging. We didn't think it was going to be an issue. Now it is arising as an issue. Also, in parts of the Shawnee, we have some wilderness areas that we would like to designate. And in any wilderness designation project, the congressman who covers that district, the congressman who covers that district has to be behind it. And John hasn't been behind the designations in Massac County and Pope County, and that would be one of the first things I would do after the highway projects is wilderness designation. For the areas that have been proposed.
Let's talk for just a second about national security in Iraq, which on a national level seems to be one of the overriding issues. Where do you stand on the issue about whether troops should be in Iraq, whether the U.S. has made the right or wrong decision to go in to Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
And for that matter, kind of a complex question here, too. Do you feel the United States is safer or could be safer from a national security standpoint from terrorism?
Right. I think that Iraq was a mistake. I think it was a mistake. I think Afghanistan was the correct thing. I think Afghanistan, we liberated. There was a problem, especially with the Taliban and the Taliban's support of al-Qaeda. And that we've certainly routed a lot of al-Qaeda out of Afghanistan. So Afghanistan was a good move. Iraq was the wrong move. Iraq was the wrong move. We're there now. And I think the growing consensus is that what we'll need to do is, after the elections next year, more likely get out, you know, and let them decide, you know, Democratic or otherwise, you know, hopefully Democratic, but Democratic or otherwise, their own course and destiny. You know, I think what we need to look for is a stable Iraq so that the Iranian influence will be reduced.
Are you optimistic about Iraq at this point now that the troops are there?
Not optimistic. Not optimistic. With today, I think I saw in the news that there was a bombing with 30 children were killed in a recent bombing. I don't know the details around it, but that was devastating. You know, the type of the daily we hear reports out of there that does not indicate that we're moving towards stability.
Would you stay in Iraq at this point?
I would stay through the elections. I would stay through the elections. But I think that whoever is in charge after November 2nd or after January 20th is going to probably get out after the Iraqi elections.
Okay, tell me a little bit about Tim Bagwell. As you look at Congress, and there must be somebody in Congress that Tim Bagwell would like to be like. Who do you admire and most strive to be like from a congressional standpoint?
Well, I look to my home state, and I look out who's gone now, and sadly is Paul Simon. I was both in his congressional district when I was at college at SIU, and when I came back and finished my master's, I was around to vote for him for his first Senate race. I certainly look to him as someone to emulate. Currently, Lane Evans. Lane Evans represents the ideology that I would like to follow, and the example that I would like to follow, especially in the area of civil liberties and in terms of veterans' benefits.
Let me go back take us through the thought process that made Tim Bagwell get into this race to begin with. Was this a case where you went to the Democratic Party in South Central Illinois and said, "Let me at him," or was it a case where they came to you?
Oh, I went looking for them. I went looking for them. I saw one of my publications is called SouthernIllinoisDemocrats.org. We were writing a number of articles about politics in Southern Illinois, and I got interested in what was going to be happening in the congressional race. I was covering the exciting Senate races at first, but then I started to look around to see what's happening with the congressional race. And what I saw was that there did not seem to be anyone emerging. We'd recently suffered the gerrymandering. We lost a seat in Illinois. And they put Congressman Phelps into a district with another incumbent, and that was a hard fought race, and I think it left the Democrats somewhat demoralized. And so I went around and I talked with leadership to see what was going on before I decided to make my move.
We have some callers patiently waiting, Mr. Bagwell. Let's go to line one. A caller in Champaign. You have a question for Mr. Bagwell.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
The incumbent expressed his opinions on life, and especially as in regards to stem cell research. I would like to know, what would you do to protect the lives of unborn children in this state as regards that issue?
Okay, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you. I am pro-choice. However, what I'll say about that is that To me, people make that choice based on what's going on in their lives. And one of the things that's going on in Southern Illinois is the loss of jobs in healthcare. I think that what I can do as a policymaker is to make sure that those things are eliminated. I can't police every pregnancy, but I can certainly help young people make the right decision by giving them economic opportunity and healthcare opportunity. We need to have universal healthcare so that that's never in the decision making process of a young person looking at having a child. And I would also say I would support stem cell. I do support stem cell research
and federal funding along those lines.
Yes.
Let's go to a caller on line 3 in Assumption, Illinois, down near Taylorville. You have a question for Tim Bagwell tonight.
Yes, thank you. I'm a 45-year-old woman who's having problems with health care. I've been born with asthma, and I've just been diagnosed with diabetes. I can't get work. I've tried to go to my local welfare, have been turned down. I mean, they saw me turning blue, and they offered me a glass of water. They tell me to go out and get pregnant, and I can get help. How can you help somebody like me?
Okay, thank you very much for calling tonight, Mr. Bagwell. What about that access to health care for people like our caller?
I'd like to know why in this country, you know, the greatest country on earth, the most advanced industrial society in the history of civilization, why we haven't come to a conclusion, why we haven't come to an agreement on universal health care and the need for that. Every other industrial country, as Howard Dean pointed out during his campaign, every industrial country has universal health care except this one. You know, there is no reason why someone shouldn't, when they walk into a facility, be attended to. And I don't know why it's been a problem. That is what we have to emphasize, is reaching that agreement for universal health care. You know,
what do you do for this particular woman, though? You know, the job of a congressman often is dealing with one-on-one situations for your constituents. Can you do anyone for a person like this in a congressional seat?
Right. If someone like that was calling to my office, I would hopefully their case staff or myself would ask them what their background is to see if there's some facility or system of care that they haven't that they can get access to but have not been informed of. You know, are they a veteran? Is there a veteran's benefits that they have access to?
Possible referral to somewhere else.
A referral to somewhere else to see, make sure we explore all the options.
Rather than the traditional method. Rather than the traditional doctor clinic hospital setting. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, no. Is there a program? Is there some benefit that she hasn't gotten access to, hasn't been expedited? And that actually is probably the case in point, is, you know, getting her, making sure that her paperwork, if she needs to apply for Medicaid or Medicare, you know, that she's done that and that it's been expedited and completed. I don't know if that's a particular case, but that would be a case in point that a congressman could help with.
While we're on the topic of access to health care, and we talked earlier about medical malpractice insurance, is universal health care really affordable for the United States?
I think it is. What we have now is not affordable. What we have now is a system that keeps on burdening our society with long-term consequences in terms of the cost. What isn't really assessed is when people go into a hospital and they use the emergency room and they don't have insurance and they're not going to have money to pay the large bill that they accrue, they're liable to end up in court, you know, in small claims court or some other form of judicial process. That bogs down the courts. Why are we bogging down the courts with health care bills when they could be, if we have a universal health care system, a single payer system, or something similar, that would take care of this so that that people will be taken care of? I also think with universal health care, we might have an economic boom, that having built a health care infrastructure, a solid health care infrastructure, would give us the opportunity to build an economy based on health care. You know, to open up a lot of specialties, not necessarily medical doctors, but a lot of the support people who provide services, who provide home health care, who provide other kinds of support services for people.
Yeah, okay, let's check with another caller who's been patiently waiting in Urbana on line 2. You have a question for congressional candidate Bagwell tonight.
Yes, I would like to know how the Democrats stand on the death tax. Because the Republicans, Bush said he was going to try to do something when he got elected, and so far he hasn't did anything that I can see about the death tax.
Okay.
And so I'd like to see how the Democrats stand on this subject.
Okay, thank you for your call tonight. The inheritance tax, the death tax, so-called death tax, when
you know, a person passes away and you end mm-hmm. up paying so much on the estate. Mm-hmm. Where does Tim Bagwell stand on that?
Yeah, I can't speak for the whole Democratic Party, but I think that we need to look at the fact that if we allow too many of the wealthy to pass on too much of their wealth, it all accumulates into a small group of people. That's the main reason, one of the major reasons for a death tax. We should also, however, be concerned about passing on small businesses to family members and smaller farms to family members. That's one of those other cases, too, where, you know, especially among farming communities, if your farm is $2, $3 million, you should have probably planned your estate so that there's a way of transferring that through a corporation, through a family corporation, or those type of things.
You don't want to eliminate the death tax, though.
No, I don't want to eliminate it. No.
Would you reduce it? Would you change it at all?
It should be balanced in favor of the middle class. If we're going to do anything, it should be balanced in favor of the middle class and not for the wealthy.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Let's go with another caller, line 4, Chatham, Illinois. You have a question for Congressional Candidate Bagwell.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in Mr. Bagwell's approaches to unemployment, not so much the high-tech industry. I don't know that there's much of that in Southern Illinois, particularly, you know, right where he's at. Anyhow, does he have any approaches or ideas about revitalizing the coal mining industry?
Yes, thank you for your call. Indeed, Southern Illinois is well mm-hmm. known, at mm-hmm. least historically, as a coal mining
right.
region. I suppose some oil, too. What about that?
Well, there's a lot of opportunity to do that. Illinois coal has one very good feature and one very bad feature. We have high sulfur content, but we have low mercury content. Now, the thing is that we have methods for scrubbing that sulfur. And, you know, what we need to do is scrub that sulfur to be able to sell our low mercury content coal and to use it here locally. We're in some parts of Southern Illinois and some parts of all of Illinois where we are importing Western coal because of their low sulfur content. We need to invest in the scrubbing the sulfur and so that we can mine our coal and send our low mercury content coal to use it in our facilities and sell it elsewhere.
Are there mines throughout Southern Illinois? I know there would be just south of Springfield. There
right.
are some mines that have closed down, or at least the miners are no longer working. Is that the case throughout Southern Illinois?
We continue to see mines close. I think we only have 1,500 active coal miners in the UMW. It's a figure that I've heard. We have much more retirees and much more retirees. What we need is a way to open up these, but also do it in an environmentally safe way, which by scrubbing, we assure that.
Let me go through some of those rapid-fire issues like I did with Congressman Shimkus and get your response
okay.
to some of them. So brief answer, not real long here. What about that proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage?
I would vote against it.
So you would vote to allow same-sex marriage?
Well, you said the vote to ban. So yeah. I would not ban same-sex marriage. I would not vote for a constitutional amendment. That's something that does not need to be in the Constitution.
So a same-sex marriage is allowable in your mind, or you just don't want the constitutional amendment?
Again, we can't be policing everybody, especially. No, I don't want the amendment. No, that's not something that the Constitution was made for, especially to limit individual rights in some way. I can't see how this is on the Republican agenda as a conservative thing when they claim to be for liberty, and yet they look to do specialty amendments to limit people's liberty.
What about the Second Amendment and gun rights? I mean, there are a lot of people that vote strictly on that issue.
Mm-hmm. I support the Second Amendment. I support most of the NRA's agenda, but not all of it. I don't know what my score is, but I think Congressman Shimkus probably has their endorsement. He did last time. But on most of the major issues, we were in agreement on the NRA questionnaire.
Would you have liked to see the assault ban weapons, the ban on that, continue, or were you okay with the expiration of that?
Well, the funny thing about it is, unfortunately, is that the law really had no teeth, so the expiration of it is more of a symbolic thing. The modifications that individuals could modify the non-assault weapons back to an assault rifles. There was no it didn't have a lot of teeth, so it's not a big issue.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but what about the issue of abortion? That also is a hot button issue mm-hmm. for a lot of voters.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about Tim Bagwell's stance as it comes to federal law regarding abortion.
Right, as I said earlier, I'm pro-choice, And what that means, though, people, that doesn't mean I'm pro-abortion. It means I believe in a woman's right to be sovereign over her body and determine whether or not she wants to continue with a pregnancy.
Tim, as you, you know, I know you have this business experience and you have computer experience. Are there regulations needed on the Internet? There is so much talk about a possible tax on email, about restrictions of some sort on some sites on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Being Internet savvy, so to speak, what should the federal government do, if anything, regarding the Internet?
Well, in terms of the First Amendment, I don't see imposing any limitations on the content. I do believe that the software should be out there to protect children, and everything should be done to protect children's use of the Internet. The idea of a sales tax on email scares the heck out of me. my own bias, being in the Internet business, is that I kind of like that tax break, you know, that break in the taxes. So,
Hands off on the Internet in terms of the government?
For the time being, until we see I would be interested in examining what's happening with prescription drugs. I have good Democrats who are pharmacists in Southern Illinois, and I wonder how they're doing with having to compete with Internet pharmacies and importation from Canada. I'd like to see us have the same kind of price structure and volume that Canada, as they do in Canada, so that our pharmacists here could compete and not be overlooked.
Let's go back to a caller, Line 1, Carlock, Illinois, not far from Bloomington. You have a question for Mr. Bagwell tonight. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Bagwell,
thank you
for answering so many questions tonight. You had mentioned on the death tax that you are interested in skewing that towards the middle class, but then you mentioned that farms of $2 to $3 million should arrange for their taxes to be appropriated in a correct manner or the way they wish. What level do you feel is middle class based on those numbers that you gave?
Well, yeah, I don't know if that was the most the best. And I know in Northern Illinois, different from Southern Illinois, a farm becomes worth two smaller acres become worth $2 or $3 million quicker than south of 70. That was a figure I threw out, and I think it's a matter of the income that's produced on that farm. And there's a number of factors. That's a farm actuarial type person.
Where do you see middle class, I guess, is what he's asking. Where is, from
in terms
a farmer's
of the farm,
standpoint, what would you say is middle class when it comes to death taxes? Are we talking $1 million farm?
In this part of Illinois, it has more than $1 million farm, I would think.
But from a taxation standpoint, from the federal government, you were talking about changing that so it's advantageous.
Well, I think also we can look at exemptions on certain times. And what we need to really do is protect the family farm from business corporations that are absorbing the family farmer. So it needs to be balanced for that, because what can happen, I think the tripwire is you know, to make sure that they don't have to sell that family farm to a corporation in order to pay the taxes. That's ridiculous.
We only have a few minutes left. Let's get to one last caller tonight, Line 2 in Springfield. Quick question for Mr. Bagwell.
Yes. I'm very worried about low-income housing. I'm going to help a woman move today on Saturday, a working woman, and she's in danger of being homeless. And my own son is on Section 8, and I've heard there's cuts in it.
Yes.
What would it mean if you got elected to help? What would it mean to these people?
Okay, thanks for your call tonight from Springfield.
We need to boost Section 8 back up. You know, the administration's cut on Section 8. It's like Abe Lincoln said, you know, the government must love the poor because they create so many of them. This is one of the most outrageous thing that the administration is doing is cutting Section 8. We need to reinforce Section 8 and make sure people have housing. Especially working people. How can we, you know, you have working people who are being tossed out on the street. This is ridiculous.
So is that would you do anything with minimum wage at all?
Oh, well, Illinois is setting Governor Blagojevich is setting the example for the nation. First, in making sure that the overtime pay is protected from the federal changes. And second, in enforcing a higher minimum wage. And we need to keep enforcing a higher minimum wage throughout the country.
What would you raise it to if you were raising it? I mean, do you have a level that you would say?
I don't have a specific level. That's a matter of a study, because you can't. Well, it's going to be $15 an hour, and that would obviously shut down that would be a problem for a lot of people.
Might make McDonald's hamburgers.
Yeah,
more
that would make those hamburgers more expensive. But there's got to be there's a way of figuring that out. Yeah.
Tim, with just a few minutes left here in the program, let me go back and recap from the top here. What do you feel, again, number one priority for you, assuming you're elected?
Economic development in Southern Illinois, first by bolstering our transportation infrastructure.
And you, specifically, you want to a project for a highway.
Yeah, Highway 50, complete its widening. We own the right-of-way to it, so to complete its widening to four lanes throughout Southern Illinois would be a top priority. Highway 51 after that, broadband after that, which is sort of a transportation issue, transporting information and getting jobs back to Southern Illinois. Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Tim Bagwell for being here tonight, the Democrat in the congressional race in the 19th District. Our thanks, too, for the videotaped interview by Congressman John Shimkus. We will take the week off next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks, two Thursdays from now, with an interview with the 15th District congressional candidates, Tim Johnson and Dr. David Gill. That's 2 weeks from tonight. Of course, coming up next here on WILL-TV, the presidential debate from Miami. Don't miss that. And don't forget to check out WILL's website for the latest in campaign and election information. Have a good evening.